My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry. But we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest.
Hi, I'm S.C. Moadi, founding partner of Mighty Capital, and I'm excited to host this series on the age of product. Let's hear from my guest today.
Sammy, very, very welcome to this Kaufman Fellow podcast. Why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me here. So this is Sami Inkinen, born and raised in Finland, now been in America for about 18 years. And I guess on a personal front, proudest accomplishment is that I'm a father of two little girls who are better than me in all possible ways. And I guess professionally, I'm a trained as a physicist and started my career in a nuclear power plant way back when in Finland. But perhaps most relevant for this conversation is that I'm a co-founder of Trulia, the online real estate marketplace, and then most recently, co-founder and CEO of Virta Health, a healthcare technology company.
Awesome. And Sami, you and I have known each other for probably half of your time in the US, and I've followed your success, and you've always been really an inspiration for me. What I want to do during this conversation is start with your time at Trulia, then look at your transition from Trulia to Virta Health, and then look out at the future of innovation and the role that venture capital can play there. So let's start with Trulia. You're a co-founder and you took it public. And I'd like to hear about your favorite VC investor, like how you met them, how they earned your trust, what differentiated them.
Yeah, so favorite VC investor. Well, first I should say, going back to the Trulia experience, that obviously you'd want to work with the best. But honestly, as an immigrant coming into the US and starting a company and trying to raise capital, it wasn't quite like you just analyze the VCs and pick the best. It's more like you start from the top and people keep saying no, and you just keep going and keep going and keep going, and until you hear yes, and then you may find a VC or investor who invests in you. We did get pretty lucky at Trulia in that we had Sequoia Capital and Accel invested in Trulia. So I guess we got pretty high profile investors. And to your question, what's my favorite? I should first say that I've had the privilege and luck to work with many, many very amazing investors, from Michael Moritz from Sequoia to Theresa Ronsetta at Accel. And now at Virta Health, I have fantastic partners from Venrock, Brian Roberts and Bob Kocher. So I guess I have a decent sample to choose from. My favorite, I might pick Greg Waldorf here as an investor, who initially represented a small institutional fund 2004-2005 when we were starting Trulia. And he then ended up becoming our first institutional investor. He was a 10-year board member at Trulia. And now, somehow, he decided to, after I asked him, somehow he decided to sign up for another tour of duty. So now he's been my board member at Virta for about 3 years. So why would I say he's my favorite, although I have many favorites? There's a couple of things that I would say. One, now that I've worked with Greg for 15 years, I can tell that he's a really just a good human being, and he cares about the people he works with. as if a human first. And so I would say that's one thing. Secondly, it's always about the common goal. It's not about satisfying his personal and professional needs, so ego, but it's all about the common goal, which obviously when you're building a company, it's to make the company succeed on its mission. And then I guess thirdly, he's an operator, he's been a CEO and a builder himself. So from a one type of value add perspective, time after time, I can tell that he can see around the corner. So he has interesting insights as a board member and investor to share and say, hey, I think you may need to pay attention to that. So those are some of the things. And then I guess lastly, as an investor and board member, you know, he's putting the work and the effort. So he's there for me when I need help and very willing to help even outside of the formal board engagement. So maybe Greg, I think he's a great example of a VC and now just a board member on Virta board.
And that's great. I mean, I'm hearing, first of all, you know, he's a great person and it's a people's business. So nothing gets done without the relationship piece. But then you said, you know, he's very aligned with me. He understands what I'm going through. He's hardworking. He's on my side, really. He's my coach. Do you have an example maybe, or even if I can think, when you were founding Virta, after the wonderful success of Trulia, you had your pick, right? So what comes to mind as why you said Greg is the person I'm trusting the most? What's an example of how he acted?
Well, in the case of Virta, well, first of all, more broadly, I was able to kind of unbundle the three things that VCs often bring to the board, which is capital, governance, and advice. So capital, governance, and advice. And in the case of Greg, he wasn't a VC representative on my Virta board, unlike Trulia. But I would say kind of the things that stood out is one is really this trust. It is absolutely amazing to be able to go into a growth company journey with someone that you can more or less blindly trust, that their values, what they stand for, and you know what they are thinking about and how much they care about you. So you can kind of cut through all the noise and nonsense and really be locking arms and be on a mission together. So I'd say that's trust. And sometimes you can build trust quickly if you go through lots of hardship, but oftentimes it takes years. And, you know, the trust is earned over many years and it can be destroyed in seconds, literally. So I would say that's probably the number one thing. And then the second thing is obviously the expertise and willingness to help and ability to help. And it was an easy decision because once you worked with someone for 10 years, on another board in another company, you know what they're capable of. So those were the two things that really made him an, I guess, easy choice. And I got lucky that he was willing to sign up for another tour of duty with me.
Mm-hmm. You shared, you're always really humble, but when you started Trulia, you said, oh, we didn't have our pick, but we ended up with Axel and Sequoia. If you looked at your younger self now, what are some of the maybe three learnings that you would like to share when working with investors?
Yeah, so learnings working with investors, and particularly what I've learned now versus what wasn't so obvious then. I think the first one is particularly investor board members, and certainly just investors on a cap table, they are with you forever. So it's like choosing your life partner or co-founder. So you have to do it very carefully. And, you know, when you're starting, it may feel like, well, it's the GTFM, get the freaking money, might be in the founder's mind, like, whatever, I need capital, whoever's going to be willing to give me capital, then I get the board member and the partner and the advice and governance as part of the package. But it is very, very important to realize that those people or that person and that firm is with you for more or less forever. And it's very difficult to get rid of them if things go wrong. So I think that's the most important thing And so evaluating that, and you should not take money from an entity that will, that's not aligned with, let's say, your values or what you're trying to accomplish with the company. And one of the best ways is to just call up a couple of dozen, at least, other entrepreneurs and founders and operators who worked with that partner and firm before. I think that's absolutely the most important thing to keep in mind. And then the second thing I would say, and by the way, I should say, we got very, very lucky with the first tip at Truly, and it seems like at Virta as well, that we had wonderful investors and board members. But the second thing I would say is, you know, people laugh about sort of VC value add and this and that. Yeah, you can laugh however much you want, but there is kind of a pecking order. So it is very helpful to think about building a company like going to the Olympic Games. You want to win the gold medal. And to win a gold medal in any sports today, you want the best coach, the best nutritionist, the best support team, the best equipment, the best in everything. And it's no different with the VCs. So I would definitely, within your sort of category and need, I would aim as high as you can, because they're signaling value with the brand. They've got the best network for recruiting, for future fundraising, and so forth. And again, I guess we got very lucky at Truly with Accel and Sequoia that they are truly kind of top tier investors. But I really learned working with them that that is the case, and having them on board was absolutely invaluable for us. So maybe those two things I would really whisper to my own ear while we're starting again.
Right. So go in it for the long term. Make sure you have a true alignment that's not superficial. Just don't look at investors just for the money, and then aim high, right? If you're going to be a top 1% company, pick top 1% people, investors, coaches, and everything. That's super insightful. And it's also hard to do, right? When you're starting a company and thinking like, if only I got some of that money. So very valuable advice. And now I want to jump forward, Sami, and look at today, right? So you built Troya, piece of cake, it goes public. It's a stepping stone because now you're off to bigger things. And so you decide you're going to become an athlete. You're going to grow over the Pacific on your own with your wife. You're going to accomplish amazing things and then change the world in a different way, founding Virta. And I remember you came to talk to the Products That Count audience at the time, and you said, it's no big deal to accomplish impossible things. You just have to go one step at a time. So maybe you could share with us what's different now that you're building a mission-driven company. Like, how is your relationship with your investor different? How has it evolved? What do you need from them now that you maybe didn't need or needed in a different way during your days at Trulia?
Yeah, well, a couple of things are different with how I look at investors and how I have been able to look at investors. But before that, you mentioned this term, how are things different now that you're building a mission-driven company? I would say one thing that, for the founder or founders, it is very important actually to define the mission and then to some extent be in love with the mission, because building a company, no matter how much it is fun, but it's also very, very, very hard work. And it takes on average at least a decade, not like a year or two. And it's very difficult to succeed unless you know what's your actual mission and that you feel that deep connection. And if I use the Olympic athlete analogy again, like, nobody's going to win an Olympic gold medal not loving their sport and the training itself. Like, you can't just do it with the kind of all the work is justified by the end, because you don't even know where you end up. So anyways, I just wanted to mention that the mission and the personal connection to mission is absolutely critical, I think, to succeed. And so you asked about how was my relationship with investors different. I'd say one certainly it's been slightly easier as a second time entrepreneur who has some track record of success and you've made money upon some investors before. So I was able to take a little bit more relaxed approach in that I could look carefully who do I want to work with, as opposed to just take the list of 50 investors and start going down and desperately trying to get money. So that's been a little different. And secondly, as a result of that, I have been much more strategic about who to work with. And I mentioned this capital advice governance package that usually comes in a single package. And so I wanted to unbundle it a little bit so that on some rounds, I was just going for the capital. And in an early round, like our Series A, I knew that I would need a lot of healthcare expertise and healthcare insiders. So I wanted the advice and money in, and usually then it comes with the governance as well as a board member. So I felt like I needed that healthcare expertise. So this is precisely the reason why I was hoping that I could work with Venrock and their key healthcare IT partners, which we then ended up teaming up with. So I'd say that's the second thing, that I was much more strategic about sort of unbundling governance advice and capital and then going about it step by step. And then lastly, just as a result of unbundling money and advice and governance, I have way fewer VCs on my board. So there's only of five of us that are voting board members, only one, even after Series E, is a voting investor representative. And that's by design. So the other members are either founders or independent board members with specific background in the sort of advice category. So those are some of the differences versus the Trulia experience where, you know, more or less we ended up with a board full of VCs at the end.
Right. So you have a lot more control over the destiny of the company, over who you bring in on your cap table, who you bring in on your board. So I'm hearing that part of control. I'm hearing I'm going to say more freedom because it's really more commitment to this mission. Like you fall in love with the mission, you surround yourself with people who completely support it. Anything else that's different, and particularly in your relationship with your investors? I want to dig a little deeper into what you said about unbundling capital, governance, and advice. How do you relate to your investors differently now?
Well, I still have the most important thing is that I have a very strong sense of duty to make money for all of my investors and consequently for their LPs. So I don't take that lightly. And obviously I've even put in a substantial amount of my own capital into Verda. So that certainly hasn't changed. So I don't take money lightly, and I try to take it at a valuation that's fair and makes me feel like I can make everyone a lot of money because that's why they gave their capital. So that has not changed. I guess sort of emotionally, now that I've been around and I built one company and being quite successful, it certainly feels more like a peer relationship, if you will, as opposed to, you know, during the Trulia years, certainly I was, well, much younger and I did not have success before me. And fresh off the boat, more or less, in America. So it felt like it was just a privilege to have somebody invest. And it felt like the investors and investor representatives were on a different planet. And so now it feels different. And as a result of that, I feel like I have a much more productive and constructive relationship with my investors as well. Because it feels more like peers, and we are peers on the same mission, which is to build a great company.
Right. So it's a very different type of relationship where you're really operating on the same level and seeing them as a almost a circle of like your personal board, right? Circle of advisors that will help you accomplish the mission of the company, as opposed to bosses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still, again, I have a huge respect and I'm grateful for the people who've given their or their funds money for us. And it's my duty to do everything I can to make the company successful and deliver them a return. But at the same time, I can sort of see them as peers, and then also understand their incentives. Broadly, they are aligned with what I'm trying to do. But at the same time, a VC's job is to deliver return to LPs. So I'm also very conscious of when we are making decisions or capital raising decisions, and that, you know, if you're a VC, your calculus is how do I make money for my LPs? And they look at valuations and how much money to raise and when to raise, and sometimes a little differently. So I think I can see that much better now, say 7-8 years ago when we were building Trulia.
Great. Sami, I want to start looking out now and talk about innovation and trends. You and I were chatting a little bit during our prep time about what it's going to take for innovation to come through. And we had some interesting maybe controversy on, is it a time where the best product wins, or is distribution still important? One of our beliefs is that with the pandemic, with digital transformations accelerating, digital health becoming more mainstream, you need a great product in order to succeed. We call that the age of product. But then, of course, distribution is important. Can you maybe talk about at different phases of growth, what matters most, best product, best distribution, combination, what you've seen with Vertao?
Yeah, well, first, conceptually, you know, I'm a physicist by training, so I I think a lot of things with numbers and formulas and equations. So this is very simple, but I would say the product versus distribution, it clearly it's both. And in terms of math formula, to me, it's more like A times B, meaning if one of those multipliers is zero, then the end result is zero. And maybe even in a consumer world, people may have thought early in the internet, it's, you know, you can just build the best product or website or app and it's going to take off. But the reality is that distribution is absolutely critical. And, you know, we have the portal world, and then we have the search world, and like in the world of Trulia, search engine optimization or SEO was absolutely key. Now we're living in the app world, app store world, then the social. So this and distribution is getting hotter and hotter. And then sometimes when people were able to crack the distribution, let's just say with Facebook newsfeed, it was sort of a window of opportunity. And then perhaps companies like Zynga were built, and then that window closed, and then you have to find a new distribution. So anyways, that on a high level, I would say product and distribution, they are equally important, both in a consumer world and even in the B2B, or certainly in the B2B world, where we are operating with Virta Health in US healthcare, where our model is B2B2C, where we are selling to employers, health plans, and government, and then our end user is the patient. And you can have the best product, but if you can't figure out the distribution, you make no traction. And I think traditionally in the B2B world, a lot of enterprise users would say, like, well, using SAP is kind of horrible product, but somehow they sold it, and the CRM software used to be horrible, and maybe people say it's today it's horrible, and now we have then more consumer-oriented B2B services like Slack and so forth that users tend to love, but still the enterprise sales distribution is absolutely critical. So I guess that's the first point I would make. If you want to succeed, whether it's a consumer business or business, enterprise business, you have to figure out both. And then secondly, to your kind of phase question, it's much easier to succeed if you figure out both the product and the distribution. And my simplistic view is, why would you start a company unless you were trying to innovate and solve a specific problem with a better product or better innovation? why would you start something where you just cleverly try to hack growth through sales or other channels with the product that doesn't fundamentally change or help the end user much more than the previous? So I do think it's very important to get the product and product market fit right. And in fact, it can be very costly if you start spending a lot of cycles on iterating distribution on an enterprise side, hiring an enterprise sales force. You can lose a lot of money unless you get the product right first. So I would say that the right steps are you get the product and a product market fit right while keeping your burn very, very low. And then once you have enough signal that the customers are really liking it, loving it, and there's good retention and engagement, whether that's an enterprise or consumer product, then it's time to pour more fuel into the fire. And I think people kind of miss that right time point often, and then they may take growth by pouring more cash, and it can be very disorienting to mask a pure product market fit with a lot of capital on distribution, sales, and marketing. So I guess I would be cautious about that.
It's really interesting what you say, and it goes back to your point about mission, right? You say, why do you start a company if you're not going to change product and distribution? There are other people who can do that and who are already doing that. So if you're going to start a company, if you're going to innovate, you have to build a better product, have a different distribution. And I remember you saying, like, at Virta, we hire experts, but not the most recognized expert, because sometimes these folks get stuck in their ways, right? In the ways of the industry. So we need to find people who are experts and disruptors at the same time.
Well, yeah, I've often used the term that surround yourself with very strong industry and domain experts, then listen carefully and selectively ignore. Listen carefully and selectively ignore the advice. So that's what I actually did a lot at Trulia in residential real estate, and then of course at Virta in healthcare. And the reason is, if you perfectly copy and replicate what a 20 or 30 year healthcare veteran or residential real estate veteran is telling you, you're probably not going to succeed, because they probably would have done it in a new, better way if they knew it. So obviously the art and science is to know what to believe and what to ignore. But that's kind of the mantra that I keep in mind. Because it's not helpful to just be naive and take the Silicon Valley approach of go to a new industry, you know nothing, I'm going to throw a hand grenade in the middle and I'm going to disrupt the industry. It just doesn't happen like that. So it is useful to listen to the industry experts. You just have to then know what are the parts that you want to ignore and figure out your own way of doing it better.
That's great. That's really insightful. And so let me ask you then, when you look out, what kind of trends do you see in digital health? Or, you know, I'm happy to open it up to anything that you want to share, whether it's, you know, future of work, technology trends. Like, if you were going to project yourself 5-10 years from now, what do you see over the horizon?
Yeah, well, personally, like I know there's people who spot trends, and that all they do, both as entrepreneurs and investors. I'm just a huge believer in innovation, a human innovation, and that's what we want to do. I don't think innovation will never, ever end as long as there's humans. Most of us are wired to be creative, and many of us, or some of us, are wired to truly try to change, take risk and change things. So I'm just a huge believer in innovation, and anything that looks like mature, there's really not much else to be done. Somebody comes around and then they figure it out. And, you know, just take the residential real estate or real estate tech or prop tech, as people call it now. You know, Trulia, Zillow, you could say, well, it's kind of pretty much all the consumer internet innovation is there. And sure enough, now you have a handful of other multi-billion-dollar market cap companies taking a whole new way of looking at residential real estate or property tech. So I'm just a huge believer in innovation. And when you think that, you know, this industry or this segment has seen all the innovation that's out there, just wait. Somebody's going to figure out a better way. So that would be one thing. And the second thing, it feels like the one category that I am excited about, although I don't operate in it myself right now, is I got my first computer in like early 80s as a very, very young person. So I've kind of lived this digital revolution, and my whole career has been about that, with software and software technology, sort of the digital revolution. I think we are definitely about to start sort of a synthetic biology revolution, where the way we programmed and still program computers, we're going to be programming DNA, RNA. And I think that's going to open up crazy new opportunities for improving human life, more sustainable living on this planet. So that's just one area that I think the next 30, 40 years may be similarly exciting as it was in digital technology for the last 3-4 decades. And I don't know, maybe I'm one decade off, but if I were just about to go to high school or something, I think that might be an industry that I would really deep dive into.
Interesting. Sami, we have a few minutes left, and I have three more questions for you in a maybe like more of a lightning strike fashion. So let me get started with the first one. What makes a great venture capital investor?
What makes a great venture capital investor? Well, I guess a simple, I would say, one who makes a lot of money for their LPs. That's the ultimate measure. And then for an entrepreneur, I do think it's very contextual. I think it's very contextual, depending on what you need and what stage of your company evolution you are. So I think it's important for entrepreneurs to think about, what is it that I exactly need besides just the money? And then pick the phone and call a lot of other entrepreneurs who worked with that VC. So I do think that is very contextual. Yeah, that's my advice.
So somebody who makes money and somebody who's very adaptable and understand what entrepreneurs need. Next question, what advice do you have for our listeners who are VC investors and innovators?
Maybe this is a little bit more philosophical. I would say kindness is a untapped force to make amazing things happen. And maybe a related point is, you know, reputations are built over years and decades, but destroyed in seconds. So I guess my advice, especially for kind of the Silicon Valley hustle and move fast and break things, would be, yeah, maybe slow down a little bit. Be kind to the people you work with, customers, partners, your board members, your entrepreneurs, and remember that reputation follows you, and it follows more than ever right now, because you can find every little tweet and email 10, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, through social networks, it's very easy to find people you worked with in the past. So I would just, you know, be very thoughtful when it comes to interacting with other people. And that's an asset that literally you build over years and decades, but you can destroy in seconds.
Great. And then last question, how do you stay sharp? Like, what inspires you on a day-to-day?
How do I stay sharp? Well, I'm in healthcare. I've been an athlete. So I would say that the foundation of health, both physical, metabolic, and mental, is absolutely key. So even before you start reading and memorizing and whatnot, I think sleep, exercise, eating well, staying fit, and whatever kind of mental clarity through meditation or white space. So, you know, taking a day off a week where you can really just think, it is absolutely foundational. Like going fast, drinking 6 cups of coffee, sleeping 4 hours a night, is definitely not the right formula. So to be able to be sharp, see around the corners, take a step back and kind of notice things before others notice. I think the foundation of health is absolutely critical. And then I try to cultivate this kind of a beginner's mind attitude all the time, where I'm just trying to be humble and realize that I don't really know anything, even about our business, and just try to be very curious all the time. So I think those are the two things that I try to pay attention to all the time to stay sharp.
So really your wellness and this mindset. That's awesome. Sami, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure and an inspiration to chat with you. So I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. It was very fun, and I appreciate that you invited me to join.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Kaufman Fellows.